We made this.
Welcome back to You Have Been Watching, a podcast devoted to looking in-depth into the fascinating curiosity that is the British television sitcom, part of the We Made This podcast network. I'm your host, Tony Black, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Robert Turnbull. And in this episode, we're going a little bit off-piste. We're not going to talk about one specific show, as is our format most of the time. And we're going to, every now and then, change format and choose something comedy, sitcom-related and talk about that. And we thought we'd do, over this episode and the next episode, because this is part one of a two-parter, a top 10 of our favourite sitcom theme tunes. So this this is going to be loads of fun, I think, because there are so many good ones, aren't there, Rob? I mean, I don't know about you, I found this hard to come up with the top 10.
You know what? I'll be honest. I think this is, for me, a lot of the time with top 10s, I usually find the top five quite easy, because that's almost always kind of like instant. Somebody says, what's your top 10 of anything? I often find that like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, they come straight out. But the remaining five, which we're going to talk about in this episode, these have been slightly more tricky for me, because there are so many good ones. And you sort of get to a point where you're like, oh, what stops this being number 10 and makes this one number 11? And so it's going, because there are so many good, especially in British sitcom. I think you're more likely to have a good theme tune than a bad theme tune in a British sitcom. So it's a tricky one. I've enjoyed doing it.
Yeah, it's been fun. It's been fun getting on YouTube and digging each of them out. And we're going to play a lot of these as we go along, to give you a little flavour as these two episodes go along. And in this one, as you say, we're going to do 10 down to 6. And then next time, it's going to be 5 down to 1, our top ones. And there are a couple where we've both picked the same one, although not as many as I suspected, actually. So there's going to be quite a bit of diversity here, isn't there?
I think it's going to be a good chat. I have noticed that sometimes we've picked the same theme tunes, but we put them in quite different places on the list as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, we've got similar tastes, but then We're veering off. I think it'll be interesting to see what trends come out of this in terms of the kind of things we like by the end.
Yes.
In terms of a lot of these scores. But it'd be great to know, as we're discussing this, what anyone who's listening, what your favourites are as well. So do get in touch with us. Do get onto Twitter at YHBWatchingPod, at our Twitter, and let us know on there. Or get onto our Facebook group, You Have Been Watching. You'll find it on there. You know, and let us know what your favourites are, because after you might share the same as us, and you know, we want to know. So let's get into it then. Let's do the top 10 down to 6. So I'll start with mine. What we're going to do is we're going to go one after the other. We're going to go number 10, number 10, number 9, number 9. So I'll start with my number 10, which is The League of Gentlemen. The late 90s horror comedy, sketch comedy, really, which sort of, I think The League of Gentlemen sort of borders, is a bit of a borderland in terms of the place as a sitcom. I would say it's a sitcom in many ways, but it sort of hovers in that little grey area space. But I'm including it anyway, because it's
I know what you mean. It's like, it's a little bit of a sketch, but it's sort of a sitcom. It's a sketch-com, is what it is.
We can't just have made that up, surely. But if we have,
someone
we need
must
to trademark
have said it already.
That. Yeah, they should have done. They must have done. If not, then you heard it here first, guys. I think The League of Gentlemen is definitely one we'll cover, because it does obviously have sitcom elements and continuing characters and things like that. But I think it's got a great theme for this. This was by Joby Talbot, and he scored all of the three series plus the Christmas special and the movie, The League of Gentlemen's Apocalypse. And I I think his music in general for this show is just tremendous. But I really like the creepy, yet also very sort of perky sitcom score, sitcom theme he delivers for this, because it has that, it's got a lot of trumpets and it's a bit discordant. So there's that, and a few like, ooh, on there as well. So it's got that weirdness to it, but it's also like, it's like a brass band. You could imagine a brass band playing it for a 70s sitcom. So, you know, I think it's got that real mixture of different styles, this.
Yeah, it's got a lot of nice tones to it, I think. It kind of, in such a short span of music, it definitely like brings in lots of different references and those kind of like different musical tones and flavours to it. I mean, I know we're going to have an episode about League of Gentlemen. I'm not the biggest League of Gentlemen fan, so I know it to a degree. But did each series have a different variation on the theme? Am I right, or is that wrong?
I definitely remember the third season having a different style to it, because you get right. The first two are of a similar tone and style, really. The second one is a little bit more creature feature horror than the first, but it builds up to this really sort of crazy sort of Hammer horror ending. So there's a bit more, I suppose, escalating horror music in the second series. But the third series is where they do the Rashomon format throughout the six episodes. And it's all pivoted around a car accident in the village, and it fears off with, and they do half hour episodes with different characters, and it's an entirely different format. And there the music is a little bit more, what's the best way to describe it? It's a little bit more 80s synth in there. It's a little bit more whacka whacka kind of kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I've heard a more of a kind of a sort of, but yeah.
Yeah, as opposed to the it's more like that, as opposed to the kind of trumpet stuff. It's a bit more wow and a bit more bait, a bit more kind of stuff on there. So it's slightly different. And then when you get to the movie, he changes it up into much more of an orchestral style, and it's great. He manages to bring that theme into the score for League of Gentlemen's Apocalypse, which is a we'll probably talk about this in a future episode, but it's a really underrated film, I think. I think that's a genuinely great movie.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I was never massively into the sitcom, and I won't digress because we're going to talk about it properly, which I look forward to, but I really liked the film a lot. I loved the film a lot, and this, the score, it's a brilliant score. I have mixed feelings on Joby Talbot to a degree. But this is one of his best pieces, the theme on this. It's a really great theme.
Yeah, it's a great theme. It's really good. And he won an award. He won the Royal Television Society Award for Best Title Music at one point for this. So it obviously struck a bit of a chord. So, yeah, that's my number 10. I mean, as with any of these, I think you could shift them around and they could be higher at different points. But I had to get, even though it's a sketch com, as we say, I had to get this one in there.
Yeah. So it's worthy.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's sort of, it's lingered a little bit in the mind's eye, which is the key, I think. So what's your number 10?
So my number 10 is, it's kind of the OG, really. It's the theme from Hancock, and also in its radio day, Hancock's Half Hour. I think it's
very good trumpet in there. I like that.
Thank you very much. Drama school wasn't wasted. But I love this thing. I mean, I love the show. I grew up on the show, and I hope that we'll have a chance to touch on it.
Oh yeah, we will
at some point in a later episode.
For sure.
And it's a really strong theme, and it's way back when sitcoms were still kind of new in their infancy, still being discovered. And so it was written, well, worth noting, so it was written by Anjana Morley, who transitioned in 1972. So came to prominence in the UK and sort of like built up her fame actually under the name Wally Stott. And that was the sort of the name that was known at the time, especially because Wally Stott and their orchestra used to be part of these shows. But then she transitioned in 72, went to America, and then did amazing, huge, big things in America, winning Emmys, first trans woman to be nominated for an Oscar, kind of like, it's this amazing career. And it still comes down to this beautiful early piece of music, this little bit of bassoon. I love it. And I think what I like about it so much, and what I think that she got so bang on with the composition, and this is sort of shown in the later tunes that I'm going to talk about, is that it really captures it in music, in that brief little 40 seconds, whatever it is, it captures the sound of Tony Hancock. You hear that piece of music, yeah, and you can picture him, this sort of slightly rotund, slightly pompous, downtrodden, miserable, kind of, you know, misanthropic character.
Yeah.
You know, sort of like living in this rough part of East Cheam and kind of like, you know, getting on with his life kind of resentfully. And the music sounds like that. And that's what I really like. I love a sitcom theme tune that sounds like the show you're about to watch and the characters you're about to watch. And I think Hancock, right at the very beginning, absolutely nails that. I'm just going to pause for a second because our doorbell's just gone off.
Is that Tony Hancock at the door?
That's Tony Hancock. Oh, marvellous. That's just fantastic, isn't it? It's just this marvellous, wonderful kind of like representation of who he is and who the show is. And that's what I really love in sitcom music. And I think that British sitcom music in particular, and some of the ones we'll get onto later, they really nail down. It's that little statement of intent at the beginning of your 30 minutes. This is Hancock. This is what you're going to watch. So had to, much like you, I had to get it in there in the top 10, in the full top 10. Maybe it floats a little bit higher, a little bit lower, depending on my mood, but it had to be in there. I love it. It's so good.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun, isn't it? And it's off that older, because this is like the 50s, isn't it, when this is composed?
Yeah, so yeah, early 50s.
Yeah, so it's definitely of that older sort of world as well, which is quite nice. It's not classical's the wrong word, but it has a classic feel to it now of that era.
It does, yeah. I
was amazed to read that Angela Morley then did the music for Dynasty and Dallas.
Yes.
Like, and Dallas yeah, has one of the most famous theme tunes, you know, da 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 forever, you know.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think she did. I think she did the Goon show as well.
Wow.
You know, like really. I mean,
that's crazy.
Hugely prolific in the UK, and then yeah, went to America and became. I think it's not an unfair observation. I think that obviously because she transitioned and name changed, it's perhaps easy to have not realized it was the same person. I think so. You've got two, in terms of the name association, two very, very prolific names in two very, very different fields, and then it's this wonderful realization that it is the same person, just on a different points of their journey. It's incredible career.
Amazing. Yeah, absolutely amazing. Deserves to be more in the spotlight. Angela Morley died, I think, in 2009. So, but a bit of an unsung sort of person,
unsung,
I think, in many
hero.
Ways. Yeah, yeah, needs yeah. rediscovering, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. We need a BBC4 comedy drama based around her life. I think that would be brilliant.
Absolutely, yeah, for sure, that would be really good. So yeah, great choice. Great choice as a number 10. I've gone for my number 9. With a maybe one that I think would be remembered more by your more dyed-in-the-wool comedy fan, I guess. And this is from Only When I Laugh.
I'm HAPPY. I'm HAPPY. I know I am, I'm sure I am. I'm HAPPY.
I know I am, I'm sure I am. He's HAPPY.
By Ken D. This is the theme by Ken Jones, and this is from the Eric Chappell sitcom from the late 70s into the 80s, which was set in a hospital ward. And it's a small theme, but I think the reason I really like it is that it starts off, it's very melancholy, as befits a hospital sort of environment. And Only When I Laugh is full of... It's basically based around these, particularly these two characters, isn't it? The one played by James Bolam, who is grumpy and you know, a bit fatalistic, and then Peter Bowles, who's this charming debonair, as always, because Peter Bowles only ever plays
stretching his range.
He only ever plays this kind of character. It's the Bounder in Hospital, basically. And he went on to that was it. The next thing I think he did with Eric Chappell was the Bounder. So you know, it's just an extension. Yeah, it's just set in a hospital ward, and it's about their sort of misadventures on this hospital ward. And you've got Richard Wilson as a quite severe doctor, long before One Foot in the Grave comes along. And it's just, it's this great little thing. It's not necessarily one of the great comedy shows, but I always found it funny when I used to watch it on UK Gold. And I always liked the theme because it's this little sort of... It's got a sound that sounds a bit like a harmonica playing like a melancholy tune, and I might be wrong about what it is. And then it cuts to James Bolam singing, "I'm Happy." I'm Happy. And then he builds this chorus at the end.
I'm sure I am.
And then at the end, it's gone. I know I am. I'm sure. I'm Happy. And I just find
suspenders and a bra.
I find it really funny. There's a real juxtaposition of ideas in that theme that makes, I think it's maybe designed to bring out that pomposity of the situation, as well as the melancholy and the joke within the whole title and the song itself. I'm Happy, which is exactly the opposite of what's going on. So I think it's a clever little theme, this one.
Yeah, I have a weird sort of association with that theme, because when I was a kid, I used to watch this sitcom, and I used to walk around, because it's such an easy little song as well, I used to walk around just going, I'm Happy, I know I am, I'm sure I am, I'm Happy, I'm happy, 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 I'm happy. So I used to walk around singing that. But also because it is so melancholy, I don't know why, but as a child, I watched that sitcom and I thought they were all terminal patients.
Right, yeah.
It's a while since I've watched it. I can't remember what's wrong with them. I can't remember whether they just have... they're convalescing, or if they have long-term illnesses, or if, you know, they're just trying to avoid going back to work. I can't even remember the full setup of what's wrong with them. But as a kid, for whatever reason, I 100% believed that they were all terminal. I don't know why. And so I used to find the song very, very sad.
Yeah.
Like I'd watch the sitcom and the episode would start and the theme tune would come on. And I was just like, oh, yeah, because they're all going to die, aren't they? And then I'd watch the episode and laugh, and Richard Wilson would be funny. And I think some of the hospital porters were maybe a little bit late 70s in their depiction. But, you know, generally speaking, I would enjoy it. And then the theme would come on at the end and I'd just be like, oh, yeah, because they're all going to die.
Yeah.
And even though I've moved on from that misconception, it still rings in my head when I hear that theme tune. I still feel like it's the death song of a terminal patient.
But it sounds like it. I think that's...
But it does.
But
yeah.
I think that was kind of the point of the show and the song, in that
there's
not
yeah.
really a lot wrong with them necessarily, because they always seem pretty... Like, I feel like I remember James Bolam having a dodgy leg or something and he can't get about much. But Peter Bowles is always trying to charm the nurse, or some glamorous ex-girlfriend comes in. That was an episode I remember where he's got a glamorous actress ex-girlfriend who's in the other ward, and he's always wearing like a cravat under his nightgown. They don't seem that ill to me, you know. So I think that's the joke of it, isn't it, in that they're probably not as ill as they think, you know. There's a little bit of psychosomatic stuff going on. It's been a long time since I've watched a lot of it, and I think the details elude me completely. So but the theme tune has definitely always stuck in my head, maybe even more than
it's
the show.
Great, yeah. It's you know what it is? It's a proper little earworm.
Yeah, it is.
You can properly hear it once and walk away and then hum it.
Yeah.
Without even thinking about it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. So I had to get that one in there. Yeah, because it's a good one. So your number nine, Rob, is actually my number three, but we're going to talk about it now. And this one is One Foot in the Grave.
They say I might as well face the truth, but I am just too long in the tooth. So I'm an OAP being weak mean, but I've not yet quite gone to see. I may be over the hill now that I have retired, fading away, but I'm not yet expired. Clapped out, run down, too old to save.
Which, speaking of Richard Wilson, that's a nice little connection there. I don't believe it. So this is, speaking of earworms, this is very much one of them. This is the song written, performed by Eric Idle, which is a bit of a classic itself, isn't it?
I mean, it's a brilliant, and you know what? It's like you say, you've got this as your number three. I've got it as my number nine, and the fact that I've only got it as number nine, that's no mark against it, because there are so many great song, theme tunes out there, and it's an amazing sitcom theme tune. It's one of those theme tunes which it sticks in your head. I think the fact that it's Eric Idle, obviously, that brings a certain level to it. That sort of elevates it. You know, it has the Python-esque attachment. But it's also become one of those songs that, you know, it's like people play this at their funerals, you know. But like older generations absolutely embrace this song because it has that slightly cheeky, irreverent side to it about growing old, as well as just being miserable and pissed off about growing old. But it's quite jaunty. It's quite upbeat, while having that very sort of British self-deprecating thing going on. And I think it's a great theme. And just in itself as a song, it's a really good comedy song. And, they released it as a single a few years later, and there are some weird bits where Richard Wilson starts talking over the middle eight and that kind of thing. But just in its purest form, at the beginning and end of each episode, it's a great... And you can't hear it without imagining a big rutting tortoise either.
Yeah, exactly, because that's the theme, isn't it? The image over the theme. That.
But it also, you know what it has? It has what I think are very important in sitcom theme tunes, in terms of the opening theme and the closing theme. It has really, really good intro moments. So the opening theme has the intro of da-da-da-dum. And as soon as you hear that, you know, here it is. This is what it is. It goes, da-da-da-dum, you know, I might ask, and it goes on. But then the closing theme has that slower kind of like, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And it's brilliant because apart from the fact that the opening theme, that's, again, your statement of intent. It's like, here we go, one foot in the grave. We know exactly what it is. That closing theme, it can be used almost as a punchline to an episode. Yeah. A little bit like the EastEnders.
Yeah.
And I think that's really good. I think
in comedy terms, I was going to say it's similar to Curb Your Enthusiasm and how that ends with a bum, bum, bum. Quite often that will end just as you see in Larry David caught in a moment of something or some joke. And that was quite often what would happen at one foot, isn't it? It's that ding, 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 bum, 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 bum.
That's it. And the first little chime will just come in, Victor has just realised that, you know, whatever, you know, has been exploded or broken, or the person he sent the letter to didn't live there, or whatever, whatever bizarre thing. You know, Margaret has just said what, and he's gone, oh, and then it goes, do, 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 do. And then you hit to the thing. And I think those kind of like little moments and motifs, especially depending on the sitcom, are really important. And I think this is the kind of sitcom where having that little sort of like punchline moment, those couple of chords that take you from the last gag into the theme tune, I think it's really pertinent in this show. I think it works really well in this show.
Yeah, definitely. Isn't it interesting as well that the two shows, both based around misanthropes, who end up in very intricately layered plots, this and Curb, have a similar idea in their themes. Both have that intro sort of kicks you off with a bum, 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 or in this case, ba-da-bum-bum, and then you're in, and then it finishes with that. That's, I wonder why. That's very interesting.
But you know what I think it is? I think it's because of the whether or not you end on a laugh. Because most sitcoms, or a lot of sitcoms, they tend to end on a laugh. You know, even something like, you know, Only Fools and Horses, My Family, shows like this, they kind of, you get to the end and you have a punchline and, you know, Del turns around and says, I know, bruv, I stole it, or whatever it is. Or, you know, Robert Lindsay kind of says, what? It cost me 50 grand. And the audience have a big laugh. It goes, ha 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 ha. And then bang, ends, credits start.
Yeah.
And that's quite a common thing. Of course it is. You end on a laugh. Whereas something like One Foot in the Grave or Curb Your Enthusiasm, they don't necessarily end on the audience giving you a woofer. They can sometimes end on a down note. Like One Foot in the Grave in particular can often end on a down note. Think about the dinosaurs, the bendy dinosaurs. There's no comedy there. It's just this slow pan onto a box, and then that music comes in. Do, 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 do. And in that moment, that music is just, it's actually heartbreaking. The different reaction you have to that music there. It's like, and because the episode's finished, there's no reprieve. Nothing good is going to happen. But that's just happened.
Yeah.
Do, 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 move on.
And then you're on.
And I think that's the nature of those kind of sitcoms, is that because they don't necessarily want to end on a big gag, the way that Blackadder or My Family or Cheers or Frasier will, that you don't have that definitive laughter stop theme tune. You have that moment of silence where you need the theme tune to come in and take you over. I think that's my theory on it. No, that's how it feels.
I think you're absolutely right. Absolutely. And that's why then you have the juxtaposition between that and then you get the jauntiness of Eric Idle singing One Foot in the Grave, you know, that, and that's the counterbalance. And it's like, to use the Curb theme as an example, that is a very jaunty theme tune. And I've read interviews where Larry David has said the reason that they intentionally make the music to Curb very jaunty, where it's always like, it's because the subject matter is frequently so dark. If you had...
Yeah.
And One Foot is exactly the same. You know, you mentioned the bendy dinosaurs, which ends with a man's murder, essentially. Or you've got tragic endings where, you know, characters have really dark... I mean, there's one where it ends with the burial of a tortoise that's been killed on a fire. You know, do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, there's lots of dark stuff. And I think you have that counterbalance of a python singing a song that has that sort of mordant humour of an always look on the bright side of life. You know, that's the key, isn't it? I think
that's exactly it. And again, I know I keep saying it's very British, and it's not that, you know, other places don't tackle this kind of comedy, but it is very British to find humour in the mundane and the depressing and the inevitability of death. And that's the thing about it. And it's exactly that. It's the tone of Always Look on the Bright Side of Life. It's the conceptual tone is in this song, because you have a sitcom, and it is a sitcom where horrible things happen to basically good people. You know, and we've touched on Victor before, and we'll talk about it properly at length, I'm sure, that Victor is basically a good man getting frustrated at a bad world, and generally is a little bit of a hero at times. You know, he's not just an angry old bastard. He's an angry, righteous old bastard.
Yeah.
And so you do have these very, very dark things happen. And then what the theme tune does at the end of it is what we as British people tend to do when something terrible has happened. The theme tune just goes, oh, well, life's shit, isn't it? You've got to have a laugh. Do, 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 do. We say, exactly. I might as well face a chip. And that's it. It's, and I think it's really important. I think it does... It maybe vents those little moments. If you've watched an episode of One Foot in the Grave, especially, you know, the bendy dinosaur episode, and there are a couple of others where you actually get to the end and it's like, that's not funny, I'm not laughing. You do need someone to tap you on the shoulder and go, I'm a wrinkly, crinkly, set in my ways. And you go, oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's true. Yeah. It's fascinating. And you know, a great, and a really, it's a song that I think at the time particularly, as you say, it was released as a single. There was a longer version made with Richard Wilson involved for One Foot in the Algarve, which was the feature-length Christmas special.
Yes.
possibly the pinnacle of that show. But yeah, we will do One Foot in the Grave one day. We'll get to this all this. But it was really popular, and I think it really stuck in people's minds. And I think people would still know it now. A lot of comedy fans would still be able to, you know, One Foot in the Grave. You know, it's catchy and it stays with you. So it's
it's a great
one.
I think it's one of those themes that, as a song and as a theme, it actively complements the show. You know, some of these themes are fantastic, but some of these themes are very much part of the show. You know, they're part of the fabric of the show. Whereas this is that, but also, yeah, I think it complements it. It sits next to and makes the show better by being such a strong entity in its own right.
100%. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, great choice. Great choice. I've gone for my number 8 choice, one of my favourite sitcoms that I adored as a child, and I still love it now, and I look forward to watching this again one day. But I went for Some Mothers Do Have 'Em. Which was the first of several Ronnie Hazelhurst themes. I think if we have to put composers of theme tunes in context for British sitcoms, I think Ronnie Hazelhurst is possibly the John Williams of...
I was just going to say, he is the John Williams of...
I think he is.
British sitcom, absolutely.
I think he is. In terms of composing, absolutely, I think he is. And this is... it's 30 seconds of Piccolo, which again has a really famous, and then it just goes on with the theme for Frank Spencer, because this is all about Michael Crawford's brilliant Frank Spencer, beret wearing, ooh, kind bloke with a young family, and it's a brilliant thing. It's hard to describe in a way. It's literally just about a family where Frank Spencer is the most calamity ridden man in the world you could ever meet. And it was it's a brilliant show with some of the most amazing physical stunts and humour I ever put on film, which a lot of which Michael Crawford did himself.
He did. Yes, he did.
I think that's what I loved about it when I was a kid, because it was just constantly Frank Spencer going down a street in roller skates going, oh, like this. but there's lots more to
Frank.
It.
Frank!
And I've now got a little dog. I've now got a little dog called Betty. His wife was called Betty,
and,
played by Michelle Dutries. And all you'd have, you'd go, oh, Betty, like that. So when I got my dog, anyone I'd say over the age of 40 thought I'd named the dog after Betty Spencer. And actually, we hadn't. Like, we'd been watching Mad Men, and we liked the... Well, we didn't like her, but we thought the character of Betty Draper in that, the wife of Don Draper, was a good character, and we loved the name. We were like, let's name the dog Betty. It wasn't after Betty from Some Mothers Do Have 'Em, but seriously, everybody over the age of 40 thinks that that's the reference. So the reference point for this is still there. You know, people still remember, ooh, Betty, but you've got to be a certain age.
Yes, and I think you and I are probably at the maybe a little bit younger than us. You still get it instantly, but yeah, you're right. Anybody our age or over, if you even just say Betty.
Yeah.
So, oh yeah, it was my friend Betty. They'll just their instant response will be, "Oh, Betty."
It will be.
So it's such a weirdly ingrained thing in our culture as well. It's like, even if you didn't watch the show, everybody has a Frank Spencer impression.
Everybody can remember. Yeah,
like
exactly.
Everyone has one.
It's like, oh yeah, and because he was just really camp. But there's loads to this. This is definitely one we'll do on this show eventually. Some others do have them because it's fab. But the theme tune, I think, is great. That's another real earworm. And I think it brilliantly, you said earlier about how a great theme sums up a character or the situation. I think this sums up Frank Spencer perfectly in just a few notes.
Yeah, you know what? I think that actually, that's Ronnie Hazelhurst's gift. His compositions sum up the character or the situation of the show in a way that, like, nobody, at least with the consistency, no one else has the consistency of nailing it the way that he does. You know, it's like he definitely is the John Williams of British sitcom themes, with the exception that his themes don't all sound the same.
No, well,
unlike John Williams.
Well, I don't know. I think John Williams has real variety in a lot of his music.
No, but I obviously I'm being glib, but I think that with John Williams, as you know, with Alan Silvestri and all these great composers, you can identify their compositions.
Yes, yeah, so I know what you mean.
You can listen to it and you can go, ah, yeah, that's Williams. I can hear his flavour. You know, Danny Elfman, you kind of know it's him. But with Ronnie Hazelhurst, the brilliant thing, maybe this is how you identify it, is that every single one sounds completely different because he composes perfectly for the show or in this case, specifically the character, in a way that no one else does.
Yeah, 100%, absolutely. And I think this is a great example of where it's because some others do have them, is geared around Frank, you know, and you know, you take Frank out, you don't have a show. But so having a theme which is very much about him is fantastic. And there is a fascinating fact about this, and I don't know if you found this out, but did you know that there in this theme, there is Morse code?
Oh yes, I did.
Did you know this fact? It's a fascinating fact that when the piccolo was played out in Morse code, the Morse code spelled out the title of the show, Some Mothers Do Have Them, which I think is amazing. I think he coded that into the theme, which I think is remarkable. It's a bit of a random fact, but I thought that was brilliant, actually.
No, it's incredible. But I think this is one of the things is like the way, and I think we'll touch on, he's going to turn up again later in this conversation. I think there are other examples of this where he utilises non-conventional musical concepts if it suits the theme, if it suits the sitcom that he's writing. And this is a perfect example of that. It's like he sat down and he was like, right, what will create the sound of this character? And he looks outside of violins and guitars and pianos and tubas and he suddenly thinks, okay, so if we utilize Morse code, that's going to create this kind of rhythmic sound and stuff. We could do a whole episode just about Hazelhurst. It's just like, yeah, you know,
maybe we will one day, maybe. We're going to cover a few here anyway, but like this is,
yeah,
but you know what he got paid for this theme that has lasted for 50 odd years now?
Oh, what was this one? Like 75 quid?
Not
100 guineas?
100
like that.
Guineas. 30 quid.
30
quid for this. What a kick in the teeth, considering how...
When was that? Was it about 73 or something? Like that?
I think it's coming up to 50 years old, Some Mothers Do Have Them. So yeah, something like that. 73, 74 maybe. So yeah, it's...
So 30 quid. That's enough to buy a house and a car.
Yeah, probably actually back then. That's true. So what's your number eight, Rob, then? What have you gone for?
Oh, so my number eight... It was tricky, actually. I kind of under, because my sort of seven and eight are a weird points for me. I was kind of like, so there was, you know, when you feel like, oh, I could drop something else in, or does this one? But what I felt for my number eight that kind of like pipped to the post a lot of other brilliant themes is it's the Vicar of Dibley.
Oh, it's a good one.
And it's Howard Goodall, and it's his orchestration of Psalm 23.
The Lord and it's, is my shepherd.
it's beautiful. It's beautiful. And again, it's really hard not to sort of like get into my love of the sitcoms themselves while talking about this, especially because we're going to do episodes on most of them. And I know we're going to talk about Dibley. But I think the reason that a lot of these theme tunes are so beloved is because of our connection to the sitcom. You know, some of mine, I won't lie, a couple of mine on here, they're not my favourite sitcoms, but I think the compositions are brilliant. The Vicar of Dibley, I have a massive soft spot for, and I'm very, very fond of it. And it more than just sort of like, oh, it's a funny sitcom from when I was a teenager into adult, because it was that weird... disjointed run that it had over years and years. But The Vicar of Dibley is one of those shows that, for various reasons, for me at least, is very associated with Christmas. And I think that's because after its initial couple of series, it basically was only on at Christmas. They would do little bursts, you know, they'll have two or three episodes at Christmas. and episodes about Christmas. And so this theme tune, which is a beautiful orchestration, Howard Goodall has done lots and lots of choral orchestration, you know, non-television stuff. And he's an incredible, very prolific composer, not just in TV. And this is a beautiful, beautiful piece of music. And it, for me, feels quite Christmassy. I have playlists of like Christmas carols that I stick on at Christmas. And I've added this to it because for me, that's what it sort of brings up. But the thing about it is, and I think it is, several of my choices here kind of fall into this category. It's that wonderful thing where it sounds like you already know it.
Yeah, yeah.
So it comes on and you think you recognize it. You think it basically sounds like the real deal, I guess, is the way to think of it. It doesn't sound like a spoof. It doesn't sound like it's making fun of carols of hymns and religion. It doesn't sound like a sort of a cheeky kind of like do. It doesn't sound that. It sounds like an actual carol. I keep saying carol, hymn. Yeah. But see, this is the problem. It's like in my head, it sticks as this Christmassy vibe. But it sounds like the real thing. And several of these on my list, I think, kind of like fit that. And I think that can be quite pertinent for a show because it's so synonymous. Because other people have orchestrated this psalm. But obviously they haven't been used in a high profile sitcom. So we don't know of them.
What's interesting about this, though, is that because it's based on a psalm, it's slightly different from a lot of these other themes that are created for the show specifically and aren't necessarily based on other things. And I think that's what makes this stand out. And it's slightly unconventional. You know, you could have had, you know, given the Vicar of Dibley is, I mean, I think it's great. I agree with you. I think it's a great show. I think it really holds up well. But the comedy is really witty and at times it's really cheeky even now. And it's also very broad. Yeah. In many ways, that's why it was quite populist. Mm-hmm. So you could have gone for a much broader idea here. You could have maybe used a bit of classical music, but you could have had something much broader. But I think it's quite nice the way, yeah, as you say, it's something that evokes Christmas. And I mean, now Vicar of Dibley's kind of, I think, gone down as one of those comedies that's most associated with Christmas episodes, things like The Christmas Dinner, you know, the three dinner sheets, which yes. Everybody, it's always on television. I watched it last Christmas. You know, I know, watched it at Christmas. It's a really synonymous show with those kind of things, classics and Christmas specials. And this, from what I know, is really on rotation, really loved by listeners on Classic FM. It's played at Christmas mm-hmm. on there in choirs, this kind of thing. So it has a very festive flavour to it. And that's the sort of thing that means it's sort of broken out of the show in a way that maybe some of these others, as great as they are, haven't. And I think that makes this quite unique in many ways.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, the show is beloved and the show will stay in repeats and you know, they may even, the characters may be revisited over the years. But as the show fades from popularity, I guess, or at least from sort of mainstream popularity, I think this piece of music is going to live on in a completely different way. It has a complete life of its own, whereas a lot of the other things that we're talking about, really, they kind of, it's a bit dramatic to say that they will die with the sitcom, but they are tethered to the sitcom and the popularity and the notoriety of the sitcom, they will exist within that. Whereas this, I think, has moved out of itself. I think one of the things which is amazing about this composition is, of course, you're sitting down, you're going to do a sitcom about a vicar in a little village in, you know, made up part of England. What do you want for the theme tune? It would be very easy just to say, OK, we're going to have All Things Bright and Beautiful, you know, All Creatures Great and Small, rather. Yeah. So it's, oh, da, 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 da. Perfect, easy, obvious choice. But for different people has different connotations. Some people might find it cheesy. Some people it might remind them of school assemblies in the 50s. So it's like that piece of music, any piece of pre-existing music already has its baggage. But because you wanted to create something that evokes that sense of very English country, villagey churchy kind of vibe. The sort of thing that, you know, it never really existed.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was never really like that. The village I grew up in was a bit like that. It was a bit like that. So when I hear that music and I watch that show, it brings back all the good memories of the village I grew up in. But the village I grew up in is also one of the villages that the League of Gentlemen visited and used as inspiration for their TV show.
Yeah.
So my village has those other connotations to it. But the... it's, you know, Darlington lads. But the Vicar of Dibley, what they've done, what Howard Goodall does so brilliantly is he creates a piece of music that it sounds like you know it. It sounds appropriate. And it also brings up this kind of like this... hazy memory of something that didn't quite exist but you feel like did. It's like a friendly village where everybody is welcome, no one is discriminated against, that where lovely vicar ladies can turn up and all the old men can be grumpy but secretly fancy her, and within a week everybody loves her and we have wonderful Christmases forever and ever and ever. It's like the music kind of, it does all that in this composition of music. It brings it's nostalgic. It's a piece of music that makes you nostalgic whilst being a new piece of music. And it makes you nostalgic for something, for a memory that never quite existed, but it still makes you feel warm to think on it.
Warmth is the key, absolutely. I tell you what I always remember from it, and you know, when we talk about the Vicar of Dibley, I'm going to make sure we point out that forget the MCU, Vicar of Dibley was the first thing to do post-credit sequences, because every episode ends with Geraldine and Alice telling jokes to each other in the rectory or whatever. And then at the end of that, which usually ends on a gag, you just get the still water to fade it out. And that's what I always remember from this every time. Yeah. So, yeah, post-credit sequences.
But you know what? Vicar of Dibley. It's the same thing we're talking about, the 1 foot in the grave. It's the using that part of the music.
You know, exactly.
The music has faded down. We come up to this scene and then we just get that little punch, like whatever ridiculous thing Alice has said, whatever horrendous face Geraldine has just pulled. And you just get that little...
Yeah, at the end. Just the sign off. Yeah.
Beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Great.
It's so good. Great choice. So for my 7, I've gone for... Probably I would say this is the cheesiest theme on this entire list. And I threw this in because this is a sitcom that has, I think, been a bit forgotten, but it was huge in the 80s and maybe a little bit of the 90s. And I loved this growing up. I used to watch it every week. This is Bread.
Ooh, gotta get up, gotta get out.
Gotta.
Ooh, grab the world by the throat and shout. Ooh, gotta find it, get us a share. Ooh, making bread out of nothing but air. Riding high.
This was a sitcom by Carla Lane that aired through to 1991. And it was about a Liverpudlian family called the Boswells. And it was just really about the scrapes they were getting into, working class family, you know, a bit of a forerunner to maybe stuff like the royal family in many ways. And Carla Lane obviously had a real sort of history with comic writing going back to like the 60s with the Live Birds and all this kind of stuff. So it's very, very of its time in a way. But like I thought this was great. And the theme tune is so catchy because it's written by Carla Lane and the composer of the show, David Mackay, performed by members of the cast. And it has a really catchy tune. It starts up with, gotta get up, gotta get out. And it's so cheesy. And it ends with a summation, really, of the show, which is all about this close-knit family. It ends with the line, keep it in the family, we'll be right at home. And it would finish with that and then cut into the episode. And I loved it. I loved it. It's really, really cheesy and it's very 80s. But I had to put this in there because this is when I thought of sitcom theme tunes, Bread, which is a show which I haven't watched in years and one day I want to rewatch it. It came into my head instantly. How much do you remember this?
So, you know what? This is actually a really good example of the power of sitcom theme tunes, yeah. I think. Because I hate it, Brett. I fucking hated it. When I say I hated it, I mean really I really it. Couldn't Brilliant. Stand it. And I think I've probably touched on this in the past. I was a big fan of Butterflies. It's probably not a good thing because Butterflies is about a very, very middle-aged, middle-class yeah. family, and Bread is about a working-class family. It makes me sound like a complete snob. But for many reasons, and hopefully we will talk about Bread. If not Bread, then we'll have a Carla Lane episode,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Yeah, I think we should.
I'm sure. Because she's a fascinating, prolific writer, and I enjoy a lot of her work. But for me, Bread was, didn't really do it for me. I felt it was a little bit too... professionally scouse, and I was just, you know, even as a kid I was just kind of like, oh, we get it, Carla, we get it. But you're right, I think, you know, forerunner for things like Royal Family and other kind of, you know, sitcoms that aren't just about middle-class middle-aged families. And I think the theme tune kind of reflects that. I hate the theme tune. I hate the theme tune as well. But I do hate the theme tune for different kind of reasons. One, obviously, is it reminds me of the show.
It reminds you of Bread.
Like you say, it's like, fucking hate Bread. And it's really, you know, it is really cheesy. It's very 80s as a theme tune. I think most of the other theme tunes we're talking about actually, as compositions in their own right, I think across the board, you know, even when we do our next episode and we talk about the top five, I think generally they've aged very, very well. I think Bread is one that hasn't aged as well, because you hear it does sound like a cheesy 80s.
It is cheesy.
80s.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And the shows like, you know, the other shows out there like 2.4 Children, you know, great theme tune, but I think, you know, hasn't aged as well as something like, you know, even some others do have them. But I know that theme tune, the theme tune to Bread. I know it. I know most of the words. You know, you make it and you take it home.
Bread. Yeah, that was it. It was the bread. There.
Yeah. That fucking chicken. They're all putting money in the chicken. Yeah. And I'm watching it and I'm like 9 years old. And I'm like, when I'm their age, I'm moving out.
I'm not putting in a chicken.
I'm not doing some poxy job of bringing my parents.
They had a very controlling matriarch. In that, didn't
they?
They
did,
Nelly.
They did, yes.
So it was, and I think that was kind of the thing. She used to keep them close knit and everything like that. She was the awful people. She was awful. But like,
no wonder he was having an affair with that tat.
Yeah.
Are you
I remember all this. Oh my god, Bread rewatch is happening at some point, I tell you. And I think my wife will be like, "What is this shit?" Because sometimes I put something on and she'll, "What is this shit you're watching?" So she'd probably agree with you.
But you know what? It's like, digressions aside, yeah, never liked the show, didn't properly watch it, didn't really like the theme tune, but I can't fault it as a theme tune because it was perfectly in tune and in keeping with the show. And I remember it, you know, what is it, 30 years later? 30 years later, I could quite easily sit down and sing, you know, most of the words and get the theme, and I, like I say, I can picture the title sequence, you know. It's like, so these are the signs of a good theme tune, even if it's not one that I would want to sit and listen to, even if it doesn't bring back wonderful memories for me. It stuck, it was prolific.
You know,
you hear it and you know what the show is,
you get a real flavor for it, absolutely. So yeah, if you Bread is probably one of the more obscure on this list now that we're talking about. So yeah, go and have a listen if you dare. But
I mean, that's crazy though, isn't it? I mean, for us saying this, the idea of Bread being kind of an obscure sitcom.
It was huge.
Because it was huge. It was massive.
It was everywhere. Everyone watched Bread.
It was massive. Because, you know, Carla Lane was a massive, prolific writer from the 60s through the 70s. And I guess this was her last really great show in terms of being successful and being popular. She did a couple of sitcoms after this that didn't really stick. But yeah, it's like it was massive, massive, huge show Yet you're right. Most people, it's a bit obscure.
It's obscure now. Amazing. Yeah. It's crazy. Very interesting. Yeah. We'll get to this or Carla Lane at some point. Absolutely. Because there's a lot to talk about there, I think. So this one people will remember. Your number seven is arguably a theme, one of those themes that's carried down the years. So what's yours?
But so my number seven is the theme tune to Steptoe and Son. We need to cut an album, don't we?
We do. I'll tell you what, we'd be number one of the charts, Rob. Easy.
We'd right up there. Just do a mashup of all of the theme tunes.
Yeah.
We make it and we take it
home. Bum, yeah. Bum, 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 bum,
bum, bum, bum. I don't believe it. Da, da,
da, da, da, da. Maybe we should do this and have it as an extra bonus after the credits thing. And then at the end we'll put in Still Waters just to finish it off.
Right, we're going to do that. Let's just scrap the rest of this. We need to record this. Steptoe and Son, brilliant theme. Ron Grainer, again, hugely prolific, particularly TV composer in the UK. Probably his other most famous composition is the Doctor Who theme tune.
Yeah.
You know, brilliant. You know, he was in-house at the BBC for years and years and years. And Steptoe and Son, you know what I was talking about, you know, my sort of six and sevens, they're the more difficult numbers to fit. And on a different day, Steptoe might have been a number 11 and something else might have been a number seven. Or, you know, they might have moved around a little bit. But Steptoe, I think, it's just a beautiful little short piece of music. And I know I keep talking about theme tunes that sum up the show, but this does. Obviously, it's, you know, you hear that music and it is the sound of a tired horse pulling a cart with junk on the back of it. That's what the music is the sound of. And then it's got a few of the little kind of like that slightly sort of 70s sort of like, you know, slidey trumpet stuff going on there, but that is the sound of Harry H. Corbett, you know, trying to leave, you know. That's it, brings the characters, you know, it sounds like the horse, it sounds like Albert, it sounds like Harold, it sounds like them. And I think it's brilliant. And again, it is one of those ones that you hear it, you instantly know what you're about to see. And I think I'm about to say this without having any examples of it. I think it's a piece of music that gets used outside of the sitcom.
Yeah, definitely.
Now.
No, it does. I'm
sure I've seen it in place, you know, whether it's like segments on daytime TV or other shows and stuff. But
yeah.
if you want to represent, you know, similar characters, you throw it in because it's so synonymous. You know, you can't do that with the theme tune to Cheers. You can't, like, in the middle of another film just put the Cheers theme tune on to suggest you're going to a bar. But if you want to show some downtrodden characters taking an old fridge to the dump, you can stick on it works.
You would have
found
this in that way in a lot of like TV shows about communities or about particular subcultures, like those kind of things that have a voiceover. You know, I've seen that. I can't think of an example myself, but I've definitely seen maybe set in London or, you know, and they're Cockneys or whatever. And it's then somebody's talking over the top and often for comic effect, you know, even on something like Come Dine With Me or something like that, you'd have.
Yes, that's the kind
of thing,
isn't
it? Do you know what I mean? That played in. So absolutely, there is a register among people that even if younger people might not immediately know Steptoe and Son exactly, they know that music has escaped and it's got out there.
It speaks for itself as a piece of music.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. And it's actually called Old Ned, the theme. And
it is, yes.
So
yeah.
It's got a name.
Clop. It's there.
Yeah, which is unusual. They don't normally have a name as such. They're just the theme tuned to whatever. But he won an Ivor Novello Award for this as well. for old Ned, which is quite Ron Grainer, which is amazing, you know. And so this is it was already a really well thought of piece of music, I think, going into Steptoe and Son. And then because Steptoe and Son was a really sort of seminal comedy in the 60s, that, you know, a bit like Hancock's Half Hour, has one of those, it's similar in many ways, has one foot in an older kind of world. Same writers, obviously. So, you know, Galton and Simpson. So it's like, you can see the commonalities there. And it is one that, but I think more than Hancock's Half Hour has escaped. You know, Hancock's Half Hour is great.
Oh, yes.
But that hasn't escaped in the same way as this. And I think that's the signature, really, for Steptoe and Son.
No, and I think you're right. I think that this theme tune will, if it hasn't already, will find itself in the kind of the stock music folder.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, that might not sound like a very auspicious ending, but I think it's a testament to it. I think it will be used by future generations without specifically being a reference to this show. And I think it's, yeah, like we've just said, it's already kind of there.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It's a great show, great theme, 100%. So for our sixth, we've both got the same one for our sixth one, which is nice.
We have.
Serendipitous for the end of this part one. So we're circling back to the big man, Ronnie John Williams Hazelhurst for
The Don.
The Don. The Don of
The Daddy.
The Daddy of British comedy film, comedy TV music. This is Are You Being Served? The classic British comedy set in Grace Brothers department store. Probably one of the most famous and seminal British comedies of all time. And it has a theme to match. This is very, very, it's very memorable in that it's fairly brief, but it is based on, it was co-written by Hazelhurst with David Croft. And it consists of a lift girl announcing each floor over the sound of a cash register, because obviously it's set in a department store. So back then, all the floors, all the different departments were on different floors. And it's very sort of seriously said, I think, isn't it? So it's like stationery and leather goods.
Yes.
Gents ready-made suits.
Fourth floor laundry. Yeah. It's like, it's very...
And then you very
slowly have the feeding of the music towards the end of it.
You have that kind of brassy kind of... Yeah. Which, mate, it was very 70s, you know, in there.
Incredibly
so 70s. But I think it's great. I think it's really memorable, and it establishes the style. It was described, actually, the music style is described as musique concrète, which is a type. It says it's a type of music composition that utilizes recorded sounds as raw material, modified through audio effects and tape manipulation, and can be assembled into a form of montage. So this is an actual musical style that is used going back to the 40s in France. It's a fascinating one. It's different. This is different from a lot of the others. And I wonder, I wonder why that is, why they went down that road. Again, is it just to establish, I think they wanted to establish not the characters as such, but the setting of Grace Brothers here with this.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, I mean, this may be apocryphal, or I may be misremembering. I think I have read or seen somewhere that he knocked it out very quickly. You know, that he sort of had some base elements of the, you know, the kind of like bit, and he didn't think it was very good, and just decided to pull all these other elements in to try and make it more energetic, less than just a little piece of music. I could be misremembering the story behind that, but I think it does. It's because I'm not the biggest fan of the show. I'm not a massive fan of Are You Being Served, but I'm a huge fan of the theme tune, because I think it does everything we've talked about completely establishing the setting. And you're right. I think that this use of sound effects, and I guess you could call it narration rather than lyrics, really, with the lift girl, it's a really unique and interesting way of establishing where you are, because you are actually traveling through that opening theme. You're traveling to their department, really. you know, it's like first floor, third floor, all this kind of thing. You're going on that little journey to get there. Then the lift doors open as the da-da-da-da-da music kind of comes in.
Yeah.
It's a beautifully complex little piece of composition for a very cheesy 70s sitcom.
Yeah.
It's almost too good for the sitcom. But I think that's what makes Ronnie Hazelhurst so fantastic, is that his compositions are always too good. That sounds terribly backhanded compliment, but he doesn't treat composing for a sitcom like he's composing for a sitcom. That's what I actually mean.
Definitely, yeah.
You could very easily have phoned it in, which he absolutely doesn't. And it's beautiful and it's unique. And this is the thing. It's like, I mean, you don't really hear, you know, there was no kind of like 10 years worth of copycat theme tunes that had sound effects used in them. Even if you hear something like that now, it's still quite a unique thing to hear. And so it does, it absolutely takes you back to that show. You know exactly what you're listening and what you're in for.
That sense of cheesy muzak that's going over the lift at the while putting you in this sense
all
of
the
place.
Other noises of the store
the noises of the store. It's very clever. You're right, I think it is a bit better than
it's
the sitcom. We are going to do Are You Being Served this year, I think, later in the year, because it's coming up to sort of a half a century old, so it's going to be great to dig into this show, because I've got mixed feelings about
before,
it as well.
I'll have to check if I'm free.
Yeah. Bingo.
Ask me closer to the time.
Bingo. I will. That's very good. Very good. There were a few. It lingered, though. It was famous and it lingered. There was a remix of the theme released in 1996 by a dance act calling itself the Grace Brothers, appropriately, and featured vocals, samples of John Inman. So, yeah, I'm free. And Frank Thornton, so Captain Peacock, go, oh, Mr. Humphries, I'm free. That's mainly, you know, catchphrase central this show. And my favourite one is that Jamelia, the pop singer Jamelia, she had a song called Window Shopping from her, I don't know it, if I'm honest, but she had a song from her 2006 album Walk With Me, and it begins with a sample of the cash register from I Been Served. And
amazing.
And Molly Sugden's Mrs. Slocum saying, good morning, Mr. Granger, are you free? On there, which is bonkers. Like Jamelia. I mean, can you imagine what her fans must have been thinking at that point? What is this?
Like, that's crazy. But then I guess she's actually probably like our age, isn't she?
Well, yeah, she will be now.
She's
from
Birmingham.
She's
or
a Brummie.
Somewhere,
yeah,
isn't she? So she probably just grew up.
She grew up down the road from me at the same time.
Right, let's put this in the song.
Yeah, she's probably watching UK Gold as a kid in Handsworth, where she grew up, which is just down the road from I grew up.
She's probably listening to this right now.
She's probably. It's amazing. I'm amazed I never knew her, actually. I know. Yeah. I'm amazed because loads of the kids in my school used to live in Handsworth. So it's a wonder Jamelia wasn't in my school. But, like, there you go. There's another universe out there in the metaverse where me and Jamelia are like this, you know. there you go. Anyway, who thought we'd end this episode talking about Jamelia? But, you know, those are the wonderful gems and surprises of British sitcom.
There's always a 50-50 chance that we'll finish talking about Jamelia, I reckon.
Well, yeah. But it's been great. This is 10 to 6, so it's that sounds like the time, doesn't it? 10 down to 6.
I've got to go.
Yeah, we've been recording for 4 hours. Yeah. You're not free anymore, yeah.
No, I'll be a bastard to edit.
Well, yes, this is numbers 10 down to 6. So join us next time. This is To Be Continued. We'll plaster a big To Be Continued over this. So join us next time to talk about numbers 5 down to 1 and see our top 5 favourite British TV sitcoms of all time. So, yeah, we'll be back then. Thanks for joining us for another episode. Remember, we're part of the We Made This Podcast Network. Please subscribe to the show. You have been watching. Give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you want to help our network out, please consider supporting us on Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/WeMadeThis. But sitcom theme tunes is not all we're talking about on the network, so we'll give you a taste of what you might have missed in a moment. But we'll see you next time on You Have Been Watching for part 2 of British sitcom theme tunes.
Do 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 do.
Still water.
Elsewhere, on We Made This.
Red and Buried. I think that with this podcast, we get to explore all the different types of things that exist within crime.
Yes.
And the genre, the only rule being it has to be in a book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The literary equivalent of fast food, and I love fast food.
Well, there you go, exactly.
And yeah, it's kind of a crime within a crime and a book within a book.
A murder?
A murder.
Oh!
Shipwrecked and Comatose, a Red Dwarf podcast.
And I think what it actually does is simple, silly, short and on brand and fits Red Dwarf. But critically, because it is an advert, it's actually effective. I got the message that it is a better idea to use the app technology over a phone call to the AA. And that's surely the job done, right?
Yeah.
I didn't think it was like roll on the floor funny, but I didn't think it was unfunny. I thought Chris Barry's performance of he was ringing, it reminded me a lot of the old bank adverts you used to get where someone would be like, oh, you're with that new bank. Well, I'm with so-and-so bank and I can ring. I'm sure that there were adverts like Brian Laurie that used to do that back in the day, or Harry Enfield.
The Barclaycard adverts with Johnny England.
That's it.
Yes.
Movieversaries.
How old were you when you sort of came across Mulholland Drive? You've been pretty young, I would have thought.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I watched it 2 days ago, but I haven't seen it since I was about 17 or 18.
Mm.
And I think the only reason I got into that is because I was a little film snob, but also because of the band Rammstein.
Right, they had, was it the song Rammstein in Lost Highway?
The song Rammstein was in Lost Highway, correct? But they also did a music video for some song, I can't remember what it was, but it was like a burning of a car. And I remember that I watched the making of and they just kept talking about it being Lynchian. And I was like, what does that mean?
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.